Hi, my name is Michael Poli, and I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My friends are obsessed and always make jokes and references to it, and so now, 20 years later, I've been convinced to watch the show from beginning to end, one episode a week. I'm a Buffy virgin.
Well, hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. This episode, we're watching Season 1, Episode 9, The Puppet Show, which aired May 5th, 1997. I'm here today with Dennis, a cartoonist.
Hey, how's it going?
And John, a schoolteacher.
Hello.
And we're missing Dr. Frog today, which is really unfortunate because this episode needs a champion. But we'll get into that.
It doesn't have Angel, so there's no champion. That's a Dr. Frog joke. He would have made that joke.
He absolutely would have. So I'm going to go ahead and talk through the different acts of this episode. You can interrupt me at any time, but I'm going to go through the scenes in the episode, and we'll just talk about it. And then afterwards, we will give our opinions of the episode. We will hopefully have discussed every random thing that's taken place. And then we will make predictions. And Dennis may have a body count for us.
I do, yeah.
Okay, great. And then any other things people want to talk about for the puppet show?
I'm going to recommend a couple movies.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good thing to do, Dennis.
So this episode opens with what I'm going to call the talentless show, which is a talent show set up where everybody who's anybody at the high school is performing at this talent show. We get to see Cordelia sing, and we find that Giles is judging the talent, which is a super weird thing that you'd never expect. But this is the result of the new principal, Fuhrer Snyder, who's put Giles in charge of running the talent show because everyone, as opposed to the touchy-feely vibe for Faludi, Snyder's apparently having real punishments for people. And that means people doing things, like his style of punishment is really more the lines of a screenwriter's style of punishment, which you would think like, oh, I'm going to be a hard-handed punisher of people, and so they're going to go to detention. But he doesn't believe in that. He believes in having people doing the opposite of what their characters normally do. Giles is around books all day. Oh, instead he's been around people all day. And for Buffy and the gang, the Scooby gang, that means they're going to be in the talent show instead of avoiding class, apparently like they normally do. So Snyder punishes Buffy and the gang because apparently they were out fighting vampires or whatever excuse they give, and instead they'll have to be in the talent show this time. So this talent show seems very banal until the arrival of the dummy, and dummies are creepy. And from the first moment, dummies are creepy things, and Buffy says that she has a story about being creeped out, and it's not really much of a story, just that dummies are creepy. And then we cut to the last scene in this setup here is a locker room scene of a girl changing clothes, and we hear the line, "I will be Flash," from a low angle as if a small dummy is running after her, and clearly we're meant to believe that dummy is the bad guy. So that's the setup for this episode, that the dummy, Sid, and Morgan, the dummy's handler, are killing people at the school. So, any comments about the setup?
I have a couple. In the very first shot is like a monster vision shot.
We're supposed to think is
and it ends on a shot of Morgan and Sid, the dummy. So, like, if we're paying attention, we know from the beginning he can't be the monster, right? just if that point of view is like consistent, which we can discuss, but I don't think it is. But it's a little like, I don't know if you guys have ever hated the movie Secret Window enough to watch the commentary track, but like
never. That's one with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, with Johnny Depp. So like, and Joe Johnston directed it, who's an okay director. He's not a great storyteller, but he's visually interesting, at least. But it begins with this giant, long Hitchcock shot, what he calls a Hitchcock shot, of like a giant pan that begins at the lake and goes through the house and then goes through a mirror. And the whole rest of the movie after that is supposed to take place in Johnny Depp's mind, and that's his cue. But it's the thing of like, if the whole movie takes place in his mind, like, then why is the beginning shot, like, so beginning so far away? Like, that makes us alien to him instead of, that's nothing to do with this episode. Sorry. I just thought about it right now.
But you're totally right on though, that like the way that this is presented in the opening episode, like opening part, like we know that the dummy can't be the bad guy.
Yeah. If we're paying attention.
And we know it because of the Whedon cues, which is everything is saying the dummy is the bad guy. So we know that it can't be.
Yeah.
Some other thing going on. And they play with that in the first scene in the act where, you know, we have this great Whedon cut where after the body is discovered of Emily, just before that, the principal's like, I'm going to run this school. There's not going to be any of the crazy shit that's been happening before. No suicides or cheerleader combustion. And then we cut to the scene. This is in Act One, so I'm a little pushing a little bit further ahead. But it's like, and then we cut to them discovering the body, and it looks like a knife is used and no paranormal means whatsoever except her heart was taken. And it's like, everybody's kind of scared because it doesn't appear to be a clear paranormal explanation like there normally is.
Yeah.
But I may be mixing up some things here, but the dummy can't be responsible. It's just a creepy dummy. And like, that's the vibe of this intro. Sorry, John, you're nodding your head.
I just agree. I had that too in my mental notes.
But you do see at the opening of Act One, the actor, the magician, who's missing his rabbit. So there's like a really bad magician that appears over and over again. You're like, why do we keep cutting back to this bad, untalented magician?
You know who also, though, is more distracting to me than the magician, even though he's not supposed to be, is like Shaun White as the juggler. Or not Shaun, what's... Oh, I ruined the joke. What's the Olympic guy, right? sorry, guys. My brain's not functioning great right now.
I'm not even sure what you're referring to.
The snowboarder.
With the hair.
With the hair. He's totally in this episode.
Is he?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Literally he's in this episode, or a guy who looks like him?
A guy who looks like him. I didn't look it up.
Okay. I don't know who that. I don't remember that.
Never mind. Not important.
So I'll go ahead into Act One here, which is I'm calling the dummy is up to something, because all signs point to the dummy, which means Morgan is up to something. So Act One, there's a full investigation. So I talked about how they discover the body. They discover a body. So Emily, which is a cheerleader friend, apparently of Cordelia's, or not really. Gets killed in the locker room and doesn't appear to be connected to the talent show. Just she gets murdered. That's where that great Whedon cut. And then there is a montage of interviews as the Scooby Gang investigates everyone in the talent show to see if they have anything, they know anything. And in this very fun cut together montage of detective-y interviews, we discover that not only is everyone talentless, which we knew, but also that it's clearly the dummy is the last thing that Emily saw was Morgan and Sid before she disappeared. And there's this really mean interview with Xander's interview with Cordelia where she's like, Emma was like my best friend. He's like, Emily. And then, you know, Cordelia's like, I could have been killed. And Xander's like, oh, we can only hope. And it's just like really mean.
This is also the first episode where Cordelia is in the opening credits. She's full cast member now.
Oh, good call. Dr. Frog would have noticed that.
Yeah. That's for you, Dr. Frog.
So Buffy is trying to crack down on the connection between the dummy and the murder. And they're back and forth now between the stage, like where I guess this talent show is taking place, regular class, you know, this constant talent show practice. And we get to see Morgan kind of practicing his character. And Morgan is weird. He's very weird. And it's clear that the dummy like surprises him. And it's really stupid because that's the classic dummy and operator character or whatever is like, this guy who's controlling me is stupid. Also, I'm really horny. And they play that gag constantly. And Buffy implies she's going to turn the dummy into a Duraflame log, which is a really fun reference. But anyway, so then Buffy's going to investigate. So she discovers, they do a little investigation of Morgan's background. Everybody on the Scooby Gang thinks it's Morgan, including Giles, even though Giles has no time to investigate paranormal connection because the talent show is such a big deal, which is really an unusual, weird problem for Giles, is that he's so wrapped up in running the talent show, he can't do any kind of serious investigation.
And also, all we see of what his running is apparently just moving costumes from the library, back and forth from the library and the stage. Oh, I can't find a place for these costumes.
And he's getting all the trophies together. Everyone gets a trophy for participating.
I felt like that element of the episode is weirdly realistic, or at least true to my experience of working in a school, of just that like there are a bunch of random ass jobs that, you know, it's not really anybody's job to do it. And so like they'll just, you know, somebody has to do this thing and it's not anybody's job, so they give it to a teacher. And every teacher has these like addendum jobs. And I'm sure that's true in any workplace, but I had real sympathy for Giles because I've been assigned a lot of random stuff from time to time and hopefully not as a punishment, as far as I know.
It's just, this is a common problem in Buffy, is like someone has to be preoccupied with some BS so they can't do their real monster hunting job. Like, you know, whether it's, you know, Buffy's preoccupied with the boy, Giles preoccupied with school, like, they all have other...
And everybody's immediately... the funny thing of, like, everybody is immediately assuming Buffy is wrong about it being the dummy. Like, they know they're on the Hellmouth. Like, the sheer, like, disbelief of, like, Buffy, you're crazy. It was a cat. Like,
those are some fun scenes in this where... Clearly, everyone thinks that Buffy is full of it.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm a Slayer. I know. There's weird stuff going on.
Oh, Buffy, you're crazy. Buffy's also wearing really short shirts, shorts this episode.
Oh.
I noticed. I'm sorry.
That's the H&M update or the men's GQ update. I don't know. No, this would be like a Maxim. She's more of a Maxim girl. So Buffy breaks into a locker. She breaks into Morgan's locker, and that's when Snyder. It's a weirdly tense scene where Snyder approaches her, the new principal, and like, hey, I don't like all this weird stuff happening. You need to leave. You can't be at school when school's over. All right, you got to get out of here. So she discovers there's like some weirdness in his locker, and there's a weird cut from that scene to Morgan and his dummy watching. That scene opens with the dummy watching her, or like a low angle watching Buffy, so you know she's being watched by something. And yeah, it's Morgan and the dummy, whatever. So, but the cut is so sympathetic though, so it's weird. So you see that way that Morgan and Sid are looking at Buffy, it's really sympathetic to the fact that they're not the bad guys. Like the way Morgan looks is really sympathetic. They don't have like an evil look, like they're trying to get at her. So I feel like that's the end of Act One for me, because it's like super clear something's up, but they've shown you that it's not the dummy, like again, but super clearly this time.
All right.
And then Act Two, the dummy hunt continues because even though we know that it's not the dummy, no one on the show does.
Do we want to talk a little bit about episode one or sorry, Act One before we?
Oh yeah, please. Do you have anything? Yeah.
They have the conversation about what if it isn't a monster, where they're sort of almost, it's scarier if it's a person.
Yeah.
Because I really like that because, you know, the idea living on the Hellmouth that it's just another monster is already routine, but the idea that it could be a person is like actually more unsettling to them at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And Giles also says that if it's a demon, it's a creature of pure evil. It's very simple. And later, I mean, like the expansion of what a demon is kind of hasn't happened yet, but it's like even evil creatures like demons can be shades of gray. I like the line where they're like, Morgan, that's a really, how'd you get that voice? He goes, it's kind of an imitation of my dad.
Oh, that was great.
That is such a weird dad voice. It's like, your dad is old, man. You were being raised by your grandpa and you don't know it.
Yeah, you're really generic 30s voice. You're transatlantic 30s.
My dad does, you know, vaudeville revival.
And I just wanted Armin Shimerman. This is his first episode.
Yeah,
he's great.
Armin Shimerman,
Star Trek fans, of course, know him as Quark from DS9 and one of the first Ferengi in an episode of Next Gen. It's so weird to see him out of makeup because he still looks like a Ferengi.
And he still kind of acts like one. I mean, I really like him, even because he doesn't have a lot to do in those scenes, and he's playing a pretty one-dimensional character. But I think he owns it, and he makes it funny.
He gets some really great dialogue to chew. That's just insane dialogue. I wrote down the woolly-headed liberal thinking that leads to being eaten.
He manages to do that line in a way that was, you know, comical, but also not completely unbelievable.
It's as believable as this world they live in can make, like taking a job like this. There's a chance I'm going to get eaten in this job, but not if we keep enough discipline and force enough kids to do talent shows. There's a funny cut where he's like, I hate kids, and he's like, and they're the worst. And it just cuts to Buffy and Xander and Willow, and they look as harmless as anything. They're just like, oh, kids laughing. They do not look like the dangerous element.
So I think I left out a couple scenes for the act break now that I'm looking at my notes here. I was saying that it was ending when we had that cut to Morgan and to Sid, but I think it's the scene, it's very soon after. So there's a scene where Buffy goes home. Her mom is like very curious about the talent show. She wants to see her talents. And then the dummy breaks into Buffy's room. She screams, mom comes in and looks, they don't find it. And then the next day Buffy's explaining that the dummy broke in, whatever. And that's the scene where everyone's like, is Buffy crazy? There's no way. And that's kind of the end. But we hear that every 7 years, apparently, there's a demon that needs to consume human organs or get human organs. This is from Giles, who's like, oh, yeah, I did some research, by the way. I know I don't have any time. I did it anyway. But anyway, they have to, otherwise they revert back to their demon form. So, you know, that's probably what's responsible.
Yeah. So the scene with the mom. So at this point, it's only season one, but the mom is already, like, not even mentioning that there's a murder at the school. She's not worried about her daughter going back into the school like the day after a murder. But is worried about her sleeping with the window open, which I guess some people worry about. I've heard from Asian friends that that's like something their mom always told them, is that you could die if you slept with your window open. But I don't know.
Is the wind going to steal your breath? Is that
maybe? It could suddenly freeze in the middle of the night or something.
Okay.
I don't know. But I was just like, what a weird... What?
Not in California.
Yeah. I think you're fine.
So Act 2, which is the dummy hunt, continues, opens with my favorite scene from the episode, which is this great school scene, which is insane, where the teacher's explaining the Monroe Doctrine, and then it like totally fades away as Buffy is freaking out looking at the dummy that then moves its head to look at her. And it's just like this generically weird horror film scene, and then Xander's in the class too, and he's suspicious of the dummy. Everybody's suspicious, and then the dummy like is giving secret notes to Morgan. The most suspicious character you see, because he has a dummy in class, and then the teacher's like, the dummy's talking back. He's talking back to the teacher, so the teacher takes the dummy away. It's such a silly scene. That one made me laugh. That was a good one.
Yeah.
So Morgan comes after class to get his dummy, because the teacher's taking it away. Unfortunately, it's gone. It's missing. And this scene is really funny because with even the slightest interrogation, like the teacher's like, hey, you used to be really bright. Is everything okay? This kid is freaking out.
And the teacher barely acknowledges it. It's like, I don't know. I feel like I'd say something about like, why did I ask you one question and you started grabbing your head and screaming?
Yeah, he's going through, like, this is probably true of all of us, just as a general thing. Like, if something's going on in someone's life, if you ask them, how are you doing, three times, they'll be freaking out. Yeah, but really, how are you doing? So Xander steals the dummy, and he's playing with it, and it's a really fun, dumb scene that apparently it's just makes you feel like it must be fun to play with dummies and whatever.
His act was so funny. I'm not real. I mean, I don't know. It was dumb, but like, I actually rewound that scene because I found it so funny. Like, I'm completely inanimate.
Yeah, I watched this episode twice and it was funny both times. Like, it's a good scene. So then he's apparently stolen the dummy so that now Buffy can corner Morgan and find out the truth. So that cues to a library research scene where Xander apparently is keeping the dummy busy while Willow and Giles do real research. So Buffy looks for Morgan, and she finds, she's looking backstage, and she finds Principal Snyder she runs into. And then he leaves immediately. Like, he's just looking around, seeing what students are up to. And then Willow's discovered some passage about toys and magic, and that toys apparently have some consciousness when they're created. Okay, weird. And then Xander notices that Sid is gone. And Giles' reaction gif to that is awesome. Like, he's like immediately looking on the ground, like, Dummy could be running around. He's freaked out. Like he should be. That's the perfect
thing.
So then Buffy finds Morgan's body because he's been, had his brain removed, and a chandelier falls on Buffy. So that kind of, like, it cuts, like, in the TV series, it cuts from the chandelier falling to then, you know, goes to black, then comes back up again from black, and Buffy's underneath the chandelier, and a puppet's coming after her with a knife. She fends herself off from the puppet, and then they kind of have this weird moment where they're both interrogating each other, and as it turns out, they both are after the same demon.
A twist.
Right, so that's the end of Act Two.
I was so surprised by, because I'd been a while since I'd seen this episode. I was so surprised by how suddenly and tragically that Morgan meets his end.
Like, the what?
How suddenly and tragically Morgan dies, because
there's
a scene with the teacher where we're feeling sorry for him and it seems like he's got problems. And then he's immediately de-brained. Like,
well, I think she mentioned how bright he is, and yeah. I think at this point in the series, when somebody like talks about you being bright, you're dead.
Like, that's probably true. I guess I feel like there's a missing scene where, you know, where him and Buffy have some kind of touching, oh, we can be friends even though you have a creepy dummy thing. Oh, I never learned how to talk to people, but, you know, you make me feel comfortable. Some kind of a scene where he can be a person before he's immediately has his brain scooped out.
He's got a brain. I really like, there's a line Giles says where he goes, I'm going to peck about in organ harvesting. Just like such a weird turn of phrase, and like, God, this library that has an organ harvesting section.
Right, they really like have a bunch of references to how weird the library is, because Willow's like, oh, I guess I'm in demons again, you know, like looking through the demon section of the card catalog. And then
I also like that Sid is in that scene, so like him as a character is hearing this and being like, what the fuck?
Well, apparently Sid wasn't there in time to save Morgan. And the separation of Morgan from Sid, Xander's callous separation to play with the dummy, leads to, I mean, that's what I assume, you know, leads to.
Oh, that's true. Morgan's death. I didn't really think about it that way. That's a good point. Xander's totally responsible for that.
Yeah. I like at every single scene this episode, I mean, most episodes, but Xander is completely in the wrong constantly. Like, he's totally convinced that it's not the dummy, and then he's 100% convinced it is the dummy. Like, he's just completely never, whatever he believes is always wrong.
Wait, that brings up a good question. How much did Morgan know? Like, how much did Sin tell Morgan? Did Morgan know that he was a, like, reincarnated demon hunter? Does he know that we're hunting this 7-year demon
thing? I think they knew they were hunting a demon, because there was a scene where he's like, where she walks in on them talking, and it seems to be a conversation about hunting for a demon.
Oh, okay, that's right. Definitely, because in Act 3 they talk about how they thought that Buffy was the demon, right?
Okay.
So they were going after her, he was the demon, versus the actual demon, which we'll get into, I guess.
Yeah, but we totally do not ever get the story of how they team up. Does he buy him, or is he like, I don't know, does the dummy just show up and he's like, kid, I need you to sign up for the talent show.
Really weak storytelling in this one. I want to get to that scene three, which is the exposition scene for everything in this episode, and it's terrible.
It's cool. So terrible.
All right.
It has one great shot, though. The, like, shot of everybody staring in disbelief. That's pretty solid. Oh, man.
This whole episode's weak. But anyway. Act 3, The Dummy's Curse, I'm calling this one. So Sid is revealed as a demon hunter, and he confesses everything to the Scooby Gang in a wonderfully weird scene. And we learn, and this is so, well, no, I guess I'm skipping ahead. So we learn that, and this is so much story, that this demon is the seventh demon that Sid is cursed to hunt down in order to get his, to relieve the curse, which will then just lead him to die. So, and it's somebody in the talent show. And so Sid's plan is for them to form a power circle so that he can make sure who see who is in the power circle and not. And someone who is missing is probably the person that is the demon who's now created a new form or reverted to their pure form. And then they'll kill it and the curse will be lifted and he'll die. So then from there we see Cordelia freaking out. She's freaking out about appearing on stage. She's like, oh, this is how Buffy must always feel. And Giles has some, I believe this is where Giles has a funny line about, like, remarking on her hair. And he's like, oh, that, and she freaks out. She's like, oh, my hair, something's wrong with it. It's like, he's like, oh, that was a good trick from Xander. Like, that pointing out female, you know, fashion will cause them to panic. Great. So then there's this weird Sid and Buffy scene where Sid relates that he knew a slayer in the 30s who was Korean. And, this is where he really talks about being free will mean being dead. And then he also hits on Buffy, and it's a really weird scene where she's very casual in a conversation with a dummy. So good acting for Geller to do this.
Although probably more age appropriate than Angel for Buffy, just saying.
Oh, good call. So after that,
yeah, I think you're right.
Organizes the team into a power circle. The team, I say, the talent show into a power circle. And there, everyone is there. There's no one missing from it. Buffy jumps down on stage and discovers a brain. And
Shimmerman pops back up for a second for no reason.
Yes.
Creeping around. Because I guess he's supposed to be a red herring in this episode, but he doesn't. I never felt that way. But
I never did either. I was going to ask you about that, Mike. Did you ever, like, when you were watching this for the first time as the Buffy virgin, did you ever suspect that the principal was going to be the villain?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
But only in this scene for this moment when he appears and you basically just see his ears.
I know, I wrote notes about that, about his ears glowing.
Yeah,
when his ears are lobes.
Yeah, his lobes are glowing and I'm like, maybe he's the guy. So Buffy touches a brain and, like, the scary thing that we discover, and I don't know if it's before or after this, so this is a time problem for me, is like, we discovered that Morgan apparently had a brain tumor and that the demon rejected his brain because it was cancerous or whatever. And so that's why it needs to find a new brain. And that Willow, they think, is going to be the next victim because she's so smart. And so they do like a quick smart test, which is, you know, the square root of 291. And so now we know that her brain is next, or that's what we assume. She'd have her smart brain. And that's when we cut to Giles is being put into a guillotine by someone who has
Mark.
Mark.
He was hiding in plain sight this whole time, Mike.
It's the Shifty Magician. And so then they fight. He transforms when he's knocked into his magical box. So when he's offstage for 1 second, becomes a demon. And then jumps back and they fight. They get him into the guillotine somehow to cut his head off. And then the little puppet carves out his heart. And then we see, that's the end of the episode. Then we see the Scooby Gang performing Oedipus.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, that's the funniest part of it.
The whole episode is worth it just to see the Oedipus rack.
Yeah. What a weird play to even choose.
It's so weird.
That was great. That's the only, like, that and the first Armin Shimmerman episode, like, are the only thing that...
Oh, the first of many. Good. I thought he was going to get killed off, so that's good to know.
Well, he knows how to avoid being eaten by not being woolly-headed. And this episode has a couple scenes that go into the opening shot. And there's plenty of, yeah, so drink for that stuff.
Act three is so messy. This is like, this is where it all falls apart. Like, because all this, there's so much setup for what might happen and then so much random explanation. So my first question for you is, why do they have to come up with the cancerous brain that's rejected? Why can't they just have the demon transform? Why does it have to, why does it have to be the magician revealing himself and trying to get Giles's brain? Why do they do that?
I think they have to do it just because we need one of the central cast to be in danger pretty much every episode. So
yeah.
It also is a point, it also sets up a scene that I feel really, there's twice in this episode where Willow is really dismissive of herself, and you're just like, oh, Willow, have better self-esteem. Like, she really doesn't see that she's smart, and she also, for some reason, decides she might be the killer, and I'm just like, why would you incriminate yourself?
Oh, I totally quoted that, so that's a great line. She's like, yeah, talking about who it could be, and it's a totally true of Buffy moment, which I love, and she's like, it could be me. It's not, though.
Poor Willow, man. Poor low self-esteem on that girl. Yeah, but the whole, like, oh, God. I mean, so to me, the main problem with this episode that I just, it's so hard to watch, is that the puppet is on it for so long, and they have him moving around, and they have him holding objects, and they have him fighting, and I'm just like, stop! I can't stand to look at this. It's yeah, so bad. It's so bad to look at.
The dummy character in his, like, silly accent and his silly way of talking was, I mean, the characters say it, that it's funny at first, and then it's not funny. And it's just, it's on too much.
It's on so much. Yeah. Hitting on a high schooler. Just, stop. Stop being a puppet. Just die.
So if the demon is always the magician, what an incredible acting gig that this demon has, you know, like, figured out. Like, he's made himself the worst magician possible. So that in his escalating series of, like, oh, I'm going to make a rabbit appear. Whoops. Make a woman disappear. Whoops. Okay, I've got a guillotine. Like what? It's just the worst bad magician character, and it's just, like, a clumsy magician. Like,
it's a weird long time.
Even here. They've really hidden themselves quite well. Like, there's no way for you to know.
Yeah. Well, okay, and can we also talk about that the monster vision presumably is him at the beginning and when the dancer dies and stuff?
Yeah.
And it's from this low point of view, but he's not a short guy. Like,
right. He could be crawling.
Yeah, they don't even, when he turns into a monster, they could have had a shot of him crawling out to establish why it's a low point of view. They don't bother. They don't even think about it. They're just like,
yeah.
It's such a complete red herring for no reason.
Like, there's a gap between, like you said, between that second act and the third act, where it just, like they changed their mind who the murderer was going to be.
Yeah.
It could have, like, I mean, I understand there's red herrings and whatnot, but it almost does seem like they weren't, they really did just say, oh, that guy in the background. Because also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not dropped at all that Morgan is supposed to be this super smart genius. Until after things have already happened around that. I was really confused by that.
Yeah, we never really established, I mean, people later on say he's smart, but we never see him acting smart.
After the idea that you have to have a smart brain for the demon is already, like, it doesn't work.
So this episode was written by two people whose names I don't recognize, so.
Well, I want to talk about Morgan being smart. So wait a sec. So Morgan was smart, but when did he get this dummy? He didn't always have it. And this dummy apparently has, like, since he got transferred into this dummy's body, just had someone up his butt the whole time, a hand up his butt or whatever he says, right? Like, so for 80 odd years, he has just been somehow killed six demons in the same method of, like, pretending to be a ventriloquist, you know, dummy, whatever. Wouldn't the seventh demon be onto that by now?
The seven demon brothers apparently don't communicate at all. They don't, like, send each other.
This brings letters. Up a terrible alternate. It's just like Sid the Slayer series, which is
nobody would watch that show. But it does establish that there is this larger world of demon hunters, which I think is, you know,
right. And they're women. We know there was a Korean woman in the 30s who was a demon hunter. So hopefully we'll see her someday. But man, this is bad. bad episode, poorly written, falls apart, act three, super convoluted.
I did, though, and like when we cut to Giles in the guillotine, and the whole silly comedy of Giles putting his head in the guillotine and being like, why isn't it my neck?
That
works really well.
That is funny.
Why does he get into it?
And he gets strapped down with furniture straps. Those are designed to like not have furniture move like when you're driving on the highway. Those are so serious. oh my god, though. This episode does the thing I hate the most, which is like, oh, Buffy's so strong, we need to like in order to fight this monster, she's pinned under this like random giant iron chandelier, like that's in the school, apparently from like, you know, a century ago. Like, no establishing shot of like why there's this giant fucking iron chandelier that can, it's so heavy it can trap a slayer. Like,
yeah, and it's still not enough for like of an advantage for this knife wielding puppet to get at her.
Yeah, how did this puppet kill six monsters? Yeah.
Man.
Okay, so I have a question, and Dennis, I think you said you might be talking about this anyway. So this is happening. I was, right now when there's the, in the news right now, there's this whole thing about the clown attacks, and this is something that happened. Philly is one of the cities, I guess, where it's been going on, where I am now in Philly, and my students are really freaked out about it. And
so, are they?
Yeah. I mean, freaked out in the way kids are. It's this very like, folklore kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Where the like they there's rumors, and of course they also have Instagram, so there's rumors on Instagram, and that makes it much worse. And so the kids are like not like legitimately scared, but just like they want to think like they're sort of in the same way you're scared about any ghost story, right? They're passing around the stories. And so I was using that as like trying to use that as a media literacy moment and like bringing in newspapers for the kids to read about the clown attacks so they can compare the rumor to what's going on in the news. Of course, they didn't care about that very much. But there was a really good story on the media. The guy did a story, and we can cut most of this out, but the guy did this story about the clown thing. And what he was saying that I thought was really cool was that we like to think that the image of the clown as scary is this sort of like cutting against the grain of what of the innocent clown, right? That clowns were originally innocent and fun-loving, and the idea of the scary clown is, you know, sort of this postmodern thing. But what's really going on is that clowns have always had the element of mischief and terror and have always been scary, going back to, you know, Punch and Judy and the image of the court jester. Like, they've always had that element. And I wonder if the same thing is true about puppets, because you wanted to talk about puppets in other horror fiction. Because I was trying to think, like, I can think of like other horror movies with puppets, not specifically with ventriloquist dummies.
There are some. I mean, I wasn't even, I didn't want to even do the research for it because, like, I don't care that much, like, about ventriloquist dummies. But, I mean, there's one called Dummy. I mean, I can picture some. I was actually going to, for my movies, not recommend any puppet movies because there's, like, so many fucking puppet movies. And they're not, or doll movies or little thing movies. I think the best, like, Child's Play is obvious, right? But, like, the best, right. I think Child's Play even gets a specific kind of, it seems like that Sid is possessed by the same spell that Chucky uses. Like, probably the exact same spell. But, like, I mean, there are a couple of movies that use things that look like dolls that aren't supposed to be, like, but just look bad. And that's funny, like, Decadent Evil and, oh man, what's the one called? Sorority Slime Ball Massacre or something? It has a like really funny puppet looking thing. But I was gonna admit, I was gonna recommend because we're talking because there's organ harvesting in it. I was gonna recommend Repo: A Genetic Opera because Giles is in that.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's funny because he mentions organ harvesting a lot in this episode, and he plays an organ harvester in Repo. What?
I said I can't stand that movie. I hate that movie so much.
Yeah. And I would also, because of the end scene with the murders involving a magician, and because Herschel Gordon Lewis just died this last week or two weeks ago.
I didn't know that.
I would recommend Wizard of Gore.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are my movie recommendations. And I'm ignoring
I worked with
puppets.
An actor who was in a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he said, I directed just like Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Congratulations.
Wow, which you put that on your resume.
I think it was because I was like, hey, that's great, let's do the next scene.
Perfect.
Yeah, we're going to get back to the episode.
Yes.
The demon sucked at cutting a rope. He's supposed to be strong. It took him like four chops. Good lord.
Maybe it's good rope. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do the, maybe this is one of the things we keep doing, is Mike, if you were watching this episode without us, how far into the episode would you have turned it off?
Oh, man. Probably as soon as the dummy is revealed. This was a tough episode to watch. I feel like it got tough from the dummy part. It's like, oh, this is a haunted ventriloquist dummy thing? Like, this can't possibly be good. And it turns out, you know, there's some fun moments in it. It's not a totally irredeemable episode. Like, I feel like this is how you want the characters to act. Like, this is probably, like, the most fun versions of the Scooby Gang characters. So, like, in a way, it's a good episode, but the story around it is bad. But it also doesn't involve the gang that much. Like, Giles is, like, forced into a scenario where his head might be chopped off. But it's mostly ancillary to them. Like, you know, this is another demon slayer looking for a demon, and who suspects that Buffy is the demon because she's so powerful. It's super weird the way that kind of comes together. But yeah, I would have cut it off at the ventriloquist dummy part. That's where I groaned the most, and Elizabeth looked over me like, yeah, just keep watching.
It's good she was there to push you.
Oh, no, you're there to push me. I'm watching it with you guys.
Oh, man. So the kill count this episode is two students, one demon who looked like a student, and one puppet who used to be a human.
That's a pretty low body count for a Buffy episode, really.
Yeah, it's also there's no real reaction within the student body or the public at large, even less than usual. Like, they're becoming very dulled to this experience.
The talent show doesn't get canceled because someone got murdered. Like, because the magician got his heart carved out.
I was thinking about, like, the...
On stage, just before the show! Or during the show!
Yeah, I mean, that is a funny bit with the curtain opens and she's holding a dummy and it's like, it's a weird scene. I mean, that's funny. That works.
Okay, Mike, predictions for the future?
Oh, clearly we're going to see more of these. We're going to see this Korean Slayer at some point. This 1930s Korean, the pre-Buffy. Maybe it's the only Slayer between her and the present. I don't know, but we'll see that. And apparently there are other demon hunters that are not the Slayer and other strange curses. So now, like, we live in a universe where anything can be, any villain from any horror film ever can be introduced into Buffy, and it's totally fine.
All right.
But that's what it seems like. Also, I love Dennis's point, since we'll probably come up again. Willow is going to be, because she's so smart, her intelligence will be brought up, and then she'll have to be, someone will try to murder her because she's so smart. So that'll be an ongoing problem for her.
Poor smart Willow.
And Giles,
it had to happen in the last episode.
That's true.
But yeah, so what's your overall review of the episode, John? Like, pacing-wise, you know, acting-wise? I know Dr. Frog is very interested in the acting, so what you think of the actors? Have they finally figured out their roles?
I'm not sure I have much to add to what you said. I really like Aaron Sherman in this. I think you're absolutely right that the dialogue from a character point of view works really well, but the plot doesn't work. There are parts of it that don't quite make sense. It gets its red herrings. It's so obsessed with its red herrings that the actual point of the actual plot itself is lost. And yeah, I'm not going to be watching this one again anytime soon.
That red herring thing is crazy. It's like, how do I make a simple story as diffusive as possible for, you know, this 45-minute, 50-minute show? Ugh, it's the worst kind of television. Anyway, Dennis, what's your overall review?
You know, I put off watching, we took a week off, so I put off watching this episode for a full week.
Because like
I was like, I can't, I don't want to do it. and I'll say it wasn't as bad as I remember it. I hated a lot of it, but Buffy is really funny in this episode. Xander's really funny. Yeah, Armin Sherman's great. So the acting is really top notch.
Oh, hey, Kara.
Hi, Kara.
You're just in time to give us all your thoughts about the episode. Dennis, finish your review. Sorry.
Oh,
this is your the puppet episode.
I don't find puppets like clowns. I don't find puppets very scary. I found this episode to be a slog to get through. And that's my review. I'm done.
Kara, you're a podcast, this particular podcast virgin. What were your thoughts of the episode?
I was confused about what was going on with the podcast starting now. I thought it was starting later.
Yeah, it was starting later because of the debates. I tried to move it because...
Oh, okay. I was just coming on to say that I can't actually do this tonight. Sorry. I have to go take care of littles and stuff.
All right.
Have a good podcast. Talk about dreams. It's important.
All right, we'll talk about dreams next week. All right.
Wait, did we not...
No, we missed an episode last week, so we'll do the dreams and nightmares.
Oh, okay. Week.
Sorry.
I'm completely... All right. Have fun. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
That was like the experience of what this podcast episode will be. Of like, this is the one you can skip. Like, not only do we not have Dr. Travis Frog, but like, we're talking about an episode nobody likes. Like...
I hope this is the last mannequin or puppet episode of Buffy. Probably isn't, because there are so many puppet characters in horror films, so they'll be obligated or obliged to bring out more puppets, whether they're animated puppets, probably not the one that sits, you know, that you control, but probably like, you know, this style, whatever. Mm. A puppets that you animate, like they'll have to do those at some point. The Chucky style puppet, you know, I guess they just did it, so they can't do that again. Because like it is so lame.
Yeah, it never really works. It's a thing people keep going back to. I mean, there's like evil Pinocchio movies and stuff, but like,
oh yeah.
I mean, it never really works. It's not a thing that like. I mean, I'd say the movie Dolls works, but. The thing about dolls is that they're not actually alive, right?
Right.
I saw the movie The Boy. Did you see that? It came out last year. Oh, my God. What a garbage movie.
Have you seen the movie Pin?
No.
Pin is a weird Canadian horror movie about like an anatomical dummy.
Mm.
And it's ambiguous through the whole movie if it's really alive or if like it's just a crazy guy who like that's the form his madness is taking, that he talks to it and he's really the one murdering people in like a Norman Bates kind of a way.
Yeah.
That movie's really creepy. But I think it's really interesting. I hate Child's Play. I think that movie is stupid and it's basically a comedy more than a horror film when you really actually watch it.
It is, yeah. Although I have to say, like, before I watched Child's Play, the idea of Chucky scared me for years.
And that's what I want to say is that, like, you know, again, with my students, when my kids talk about what's scary, they talk about, you know, that's one of the things they bring up. I don't think very many of them have actually seen Child's Play, at least not the first one.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, the image is very pervasive to people. I don't know why.
I don't know. I mean, I was scared of it based on walking by the VHS cover of it, like, every week. But being afraid to, I'll defend Child's Play, the series, just for Brad Dourif being really great. He's the voice of Chucky, and he's a great actor, and he's like, he's funny and weird, and he's in some good stuff.
Well, here, I'm going to kill the dolls genre for you, though. Like, the doll, the possessed doll genre works because kids are afraid of dolls. And because horror, just like, universally, if you make a horror film, it makes money. So, they think that they're making these movies to scare kids, but people just watch horror movies, and so they make money, and they make this terrible childish film, or like this horny doll film, right? And like, it always works, because horror films always make money, especially if it's a really, you know, really clear what the formula is and what the joke is. Like, people don't want to walk in cold to a weird random experience. Like, they totally work to make money, but it's just not a fun world to play in. Like, there's, I say that, and you know, the characters reacting in this is so much fun, but like, I can't think of a Child's Play movie I enjoyed. I feel like I was always groaning at the sexual, like, innuendos. Like, I'm thinking of Bride of Chucky. Like, I remember just groaning throughout, like, oh, gosh. Is this written by the Family Guy people? Like, this is not a horror movie.
I'd say the one that works the best is the newest one, Curse of Chucky.
Okay.
I think that all those movies are messy, though. One of the weird things is it's Curse of Chucky is the third movie that shows the new version of Chucky, the scarred face one. And it's the first one that's treated as something that it gets a reveal. Like in Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky, there's not like a shocking moment of like the scarred face. It's just like, we put Chucky back together and now his face looks like that. Like, it doesn't have the like, they're just like structured badly.
No, it's just like what Willow says though, right? Toys and magic. It's totally real. It's like, there is a consciousness that's imbued in dolls because they resemble humans, and that freaks us out. And it's, like, as humans, we can't look at inanimate humans. It terrifies us. Oh, this is made to be a human? Stop moving. What if it came to life? Like, anything with eyes and a mouth, we are panicked. We have to, like, engage with it, know what it is, where it's from, if it's possessed. We're so simple. And those dogs prove it.
Yeah, it's weird because I think what we're saying is that it works. It's scary as an image, but it's not scary as a story, right? Is that kind of what we're saying?
Well, it could probably be done in a scary way. It just never, I haven't seen an example where it ever has been.
Like, yeah, I'm trying to think of a good one. Again, Pin is the only one I can think of that actually worked for me.
There's probably a good episode of The Twilight Zone, but those only have to be like 40 minutes long, right?
Yeah. Well, then that's how long this episode had to be. It couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the ventriloquist thing is like an old-timey gag. Like, you can't do that as in the 90s even. Like, that's from a vaudeville era. That's from the wrong era. Like, I remember I've actually seen that gag done in cruise ship comedy in the 90s. And, you know, cruise ship comedy was like old-timey crap that was from another era. Like, you couldn't even go to, like, you know, if Dayton, Ohio was where you're from, you couldn't even go to whatever the local comedy club was there and see a ventriloquist dummy comedy. But you go to a cruise ship, you would see like a Yakov Smirnoff type, and you would see one of these ventriloquist dummy guys. And I've seen a couple of them, and they're terrible then. It's just the horny dummy gag has always been the gag. And that fact that the guy who's running him is an idiot. It's the straight guy and then the funny guy, right? Like, there's nothing else going on. Like,
yeah. Who's the guy who does now? Who's like, he does the racist dummy?
Oh, you're talking about Dunham, Jeff Dunham or whatever?
Yeah, he's the worst. He's also terrible. I don't know. Nothing to say there.
It is kind of funny, though, that, I mean, not laugh out loud funny, but just the amount of like skill that has to go into like learning the craft. And you're like, you're working so hard. You're learning how to do all this stuff for something nobody likes.
I mean, maybe we're being really dismissive here. I mean, maybe somewhere out there, there's like dummy artisans, or like there's like a hipster, cool, you know, dummy person who's taking the medium to new places that we don't know about.
I know a couple puppet people, but I don't know anyone into dummies.
I know a lot of puppet people too, but yeah, nobody who does like dummies.
You know, it would be cool to see it with like someone like a Maria Bamford, who really does truly like oddball characters that have to do with her mental illness, right? Would have to do with her playing multiple personalities or dealing with those things. Like, that's probably a place to take it. But just I'm a regular guy, and this is a really horny guy. Whoa, I don't want to be next to him. Hey, let's get a lady on stage. Huh? What do you think? Hey, let's get a volunteer. Hey, sugar. Hey, I didn't say that. Geez, shut up. Oh, man.
Wow, Mike, you can do this.
You're welcome. The joke is that he's turned on by you and he's made of wood, and make that pun and then make it again.
No, I think this is your act. I think you do a ventriloquist act and then you explain the ventriloquist act immediately afterwards.
Right. There's the meta act of now, which is like, I'm not in control of my sexuality. And so I created this dummy. I'm also not comfortable talking about it because I want to be successful. And so I'm having this dummy speak for me. It's like having a secret blog or a secret live journal. And, oh, he's alive. Here he is. A secret live journal. Hello.
But it's because it's the 21st century, it's a face swap on Snapchat. Yeah,
it's good stuff. All right. Well, all right. Thanks for watching. Okay. The end.
Thanks for listening. Reach out to us at BuffyVirgin.com in the comments section to talk more about Buffy. Anyway, thanks so much. Have a great week.